All right, get ready because we're diving deep into, well, you, your own communication network, the endocrine system.
That's right. We're going to be like exploring all those chemical messengers and...
Yeah, I know you've probably got that PHGY216 guide right there.
And oh, it could be a lot, right?
It's dense. We're going to help you cut through it and really get to the heart of what matters, you know, especially those hormones that are controlling your growth and metabolism.
Exactly. Think of this deep dive as... like a cheat sheet, almost.
Okay, so imagine, like, your body is constantly juggling all these different energy sources, like glucose, fat, and it's all happening because of these tiny signals.
Yes, why?
These tiny signals are hormones. They're running the show.
It really is like an internal messaging app keeping everything in sync.
And you'd think all hormones are kind of the same, but
that's
where it gets fun. Some hormones are like super speedy. They're zipping through your blood, causing like instant reactions.
Yeah, those are the hydrophilic hormones, the ones that just dissolve in water, no problem.
Easy peasy.
Right. But then you have the lipophilic hormones. They're a little more picky.
VIPs.
Uh-huh, exactly. They need a kind of like a special carrier to get around. They don't like water.
So that's not just some random fact. It actually affects how quickly the hormone does its thing, right?
Absolutely. So the hydrophilic ones, they're like triggering chain reactions inside the cells really quickly.
Okay.
But those lipophilic ones, they're more like, I think of them as architects. They're kind of slowly shaping how your body builds proteins. So that's why some hormonal effects, you feel them right away. Exactly. But others, they take time to, you know, really develop.
So it's like instant coffee versus like slow brewed.
Uh-huh. Perfect analogy.
But how do these hormones know where to go?
Oh, that's the cool part. It's incredibly specific. They have these target cells with special receptors that fit the hormone perfectly.
Like a lock and key.
Exactly.
Hey.
So a hormone might just float on by a ton of cells doing nothing until it finds its perfect match.
No wrong addresses.
No, very efficient.
Yeah. So organized, it makes you wonder, who's the boss?
Well, in the hormone world, the big boss, the ultimate decision maker, it's this thing called the hypothalamic pituitary axis.
Hypothalamic pituitary axis.
Don't let the name scare you. It's basically like a power couple.
Okay, listen up.
So you have the hypothalamus.
Mm-hmm.
Up in your brain, it's like the CEO, right?
Yeah.
Analyzing everything, making decisions.
Right.
And then it sends instructions to its partner, the pituitary gland. And the pituitary acts kind of like a manager, delegating to the other glands throughout your body.
So it's like a chain of command, but microscopic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's all happening behind the scenes. And, you know, to make things even more interesting, there's actually a difference between the front and the back of the pituitary gland.
Oh, really? Tell me more.
Yeah. The posterior pituitary is like a direct extension of the hypothalamus.
Mm.
So it releases these hormones that are actually made in the hypothalamus.
Uh-huh.
Things like vasopressin, you know, helps regulate your water balance, keeps you hydrated.
Makes sense.
And then there's oxytocin, the love hormone.
Ah, yes. I've heard of that one.
You know, social bonding makes those puppy cuddles feel good.
Okay, so what about the front part, the anterior pituitary? What's its deal?
The anterior pituitary is more independent and makes its own hormones.
Oh, interesting.
And many of those are what we call tropic hormones, meaning they trigger other glands to release their hormones. It's like a cascade of instructions.
So it's like a relay race of hormones.
Precisely. And what's really cool is that it's self-regulating. There are these things called negative feedback loops. They're like internal thermostats, making sure hormones don't go crazy.
Keeping it all in check.
Exactly.
So the hypothalamus is setting the goals, the pituitary is delegating, and all the other glands are like, yes, sir.
Uh-huh, basically.
All right, let's talk about one of those employee glands. What about the thyroid? I always hear about it with metabolism. Oh, great choice. The thyroid, it's like the conductor of your metabolism orchestra. It's controlling how fast you use energy, heat production, even how your body reacts to things like adrenaline.
And didn't you say there's like a special ingredient the thyroid needs to actually work?
Yes. Iodine is absolutely crucial.
Right.
Without it, the thyroid can't make its hormones.
It's on strike.
Exactly. That's why we have iodized salts, like a public health measure. Make sure everyone's thyroid is happy.
Smart thinking. But what if the thyroid, like, throws a tantrum? What happens if things go wrong?
Well, if it's not making enough hormones, that's hypothyroidism. You get fatigue, weight gain, always cold, like your internal furnace is broken.
Makes sense.
And if it's making too much, hyperthyroidism. Racing heart, weight loss, always hot.
So it's got to be balanced, right?
Balance is key. And there are certain conditions, like Graves' disease. That's where the body's immune system actually attacks the thyroid.
No way. It's attacking itself.
It can happen. And that leads to, well, way too many hormones being produced. And you see those bulging eyes, right?
Yeah, that's a classic sign.
Yeah.
But whether the thyroid's working too much or too little, you can get something called a goiter.
Goiter. That's the enlarged thyroid.
Yep. Basically, it's like the thyroid's working overtime, trying to compensate, but it just ends up getting bigger.
So whether it's slacking off or overworking, you see the effects.
Exactly.
Okay, let's move on to another important gland, those adrenal glands. They're the stress ones.
They're like your personal bodyguards, always ready for action. But they do so much more than just stress.
Multitasking glands. I like it. Tell me more.
So you have the adrenal cortex. That's the outer layer. It makes hormones like aldosterone, super important for salt balance.
We're going to have salt.
Haha, absolutely. And then there's cortisol. Everyone calls it the stress hormone, but it gets a bad rap.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it really all bad?
No. Cortisol is essential. It helps with blood sugar, breaks down fat and protein for energy, even has anti-inflammatory effects.
Okay, so it's helpful.
Yeah, the problem is when it's always high, because of constant stress, that's when things go wrong.
So moderation, like with everything.
Exactly. And cortisol actually follows a daily rhythm. It's highest in the morning. That's what gets you going. But stress can totally mess that up.
Ugh, stress messing everything up.
It really does. And then there's the inner part of the adrenal glands, the adrenal medulla. That's where you find epinephrine and norepinephrine.
Adrenaline.
That's them. They're in charge of that fight or flight response, you know, that surge of energy when you're under pressure.
So that's why I feel like I can run a marathon when I'm late for something.
Uh-huh, yeah, exactly. But again, too much stress, and those hormones are always pumping. And that's not good long term.
Right. Makes sense.
And all of this whole response to stress, it's actually called the integrated stress response. It's like your nervous system and all these different hormones working together to deal with the stress.
Wow. It's a whole team effort.
It really is. You have the sympathetic nervous system, cortisol, epinephrine, even the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system, which usually regulates blood pressure. All hands on deck.
Amazing how the body just knows what to do. I guess if it's always on high alert, that's going to cause problems, right?
Yeah, chronic stress can really throw the whole balance off.
Okay, let's move on to another organ, the pancreas.
All right.
Now, I know it's involved in digestion, but it also does something with blood sugar.
But I got it. The pancreas, it's a busy one.
Overachiever.
Yeah. So it has those exocrine functions helping you digest food, but then it also has endocrine functions. And those happen in these clusters of cells called the islets of Langerhans.
Islets of Langerhans. That sounds very exotic.
Right. But in those islets, that's where you find the hormones that control your blood sugar, your glucose.
Okay. So insulin, glucagon.
You know it. They're like the yin and yang of fuel management.
So who does what? I always get them mixed up.
Okay, so insulin, it's the key master. When your blood sugar goes up, like after you eat, insulin is released, and it basically unlocks your cells, lets the glucose in.
Okay.
So the cells can use that glucose for energy or store it away as glycogen.
So insulin is like the bouncer at the club, making sure only the right stuff gets in.
Uh-huh, perfect. And then you have glucagon. That's like your backup generator.
Right.
So when your blood sugar drops, maybe you haven't eaten in a while, glucagon is released.
Gotcha.
And it tells your liver to break down that stored glycogen, turn it back into glucose, send it into your bloodstream.
So insulin stores the energy, glucagon releases it when you need it.
Exactly. They're a team working together to keep your blood sugar nice and stable.
It's amazing the body just does this all without us even thinking about it.
Pretty remarkable.
But it's super important, right, for energy and just overall health.
Absolutely.
Okay, let's talk about growth. Hormones play a huge role there, right?
Yeah.
Getting a strong body and all that.
They do. And the star of the show is growth hormone from the pituitary gland. It's essential throughout your life, but especially during childhood and puberty, that's when you see those big growth spurts.
Makes sense. But doesn't growth hormone have other jobs too? Not just making us taller?
You're right. It's a big player in metabolism too. Increases protein synthesis, breaks down fat, helps conserve glucose, kind of like cortisol.
So it's like building and managing resources at the same time.
Exactly. It's all about making sure your body is using energy efficiently while it's building new tissues.
That's pretty amazing. But I heard that growth hormone doesn't actually act directly on bones. Is that true?
It's true. It's more of a delegator.
Okay.
It tells the liver to produce these things called insulin-like growth factors, or IGFs. Those are the ones actually responsible for bone growth.
So it's like growth hormone sets the plan and the IGFs are the construction crew.
Perfect analogy.
So what happens if there's not enough growth hormone or if the production line gets messed up?
Well, you can have some pretty big effects. Dwarfism, gigantism, acromegaly.
Right. Those are all related to growth hormone, right?
They are. It shows you just how powerful even tiny amounts of these hormones can be.
It's like a domino effect. One little push can cause big changes.
Exactly. But speaking of building a strong foundation, we should talk about calcium.
Right, calcium. Everyone knows it's good for your bones, but I'm guessing it does other things too.
Oh yeah, it's crucial for so many things. Nerve signaling, muscle contraction, you name it.
Wow, it's a multitasker. And I bet hormones are involved in keeping those calcium levels just right.
You know it. We have two main players here, parathyroid hormone, or PTH, and calcitonin.
Okay, give me the rundown.
So PTH, it's released when calcium levels in your blood get too low. Think of it as a calcium liberator, pulling calcium from your bones to make sure there's enough for your body to function.
So it's like a calcium reserve.
Exactly. It's always making sure there's enough available.
And then what was the other one? Calcitonin.
Right. Calcitonin does the opposite. It's made by the thyroid gland, and it lowers blood calcium when it gets too high.
So it's another example of balance. One raises calcium, the other lowers it, working together to keep everything in harmony.
Exactly. It's all about that delicate balance. And remember, this is happening all the time in the background to keep your body running smoothly.
It's pretty amazing. This deep dive is already blowing my mind. We've covered the basics of hormones, the thyroid, adrenal glands, pancreas, growth hormone. It's like we're peeking behind a curtain to see how everything works.
I know, right? It's so cool. We've seen how hormones are all different. They work in different ways, and they're controlled by these complex feedback loops. It's a testament to how complex and amazing the human body really is.
It really is. And I bet there's even more to discover as we continue exploring this world of hormones.
Oh, absolutely. There's so much more to talk about. And as we go deeper, I think you'll be amazed by just how much these little chemical messengers shape our lives, our physical health, our emotions, everything. It really is like, we've been backstage seeing all the gears turning, and now we're going to see what happens when things go wrong, when those hormones get out of whack.
Oh, the drama. Hormone imbalances. Right. I've heard they can cause all sorts of problems.
Yeah, it's not always just too much or too little of a hormone. Sometimes it's the timing, you know, like when they're released.
Or how the body reacts to them.
Exactly. Like, remember we were talking about the thyroid needing iodine?
Right.
Well, if you don't have enough iodine in your diet, the thyroid can't make enough hormones, and bam, you've got hypothyroidism.
The one with all the fatigue and weight gain?
That's it. It's like the thyroid's trying to send a message, but it gets garbled.
And that's why iodized salt is so important.
Exactly. It's like a simple fix to make sure everyone's thyroid has what it needs.
Makes sense. What about when the thyroid's working too much? Hyperthyroidism.
So one common cause of that is this autoimmune condition called Graves' disease.
Oh, right. You were saying how sometimes the body attacks itself.
Yeah, it's wild. So with Graves, your immune system makes these antibodies that actually stimulate the thyroid, makes it go into overdrive.
So it's like friendly fire, but inside your own body.
Crazy, right? And that's what you see, those bulging eyes, the tissues behind the eyes get inflamed.
It's like a visible sign that something's off.
It really is. But you know, our immune system, it's supposed to protect us, but sometimes it gets things wrong.
It happens. Okay, let's go back to those adrenal glands for a sec. We talked about stress, but what happens if those get unbalanced?
Well, if they're not making enough hormones, that's called adrenal insufficiency or Addison's disease.
Addison's disease, okay.
You could have a lot of different symptoms like fatigue, low blood pressure. Even your skin can darken.
Wait, your skin gets darker?
Yeah. It's kind of strange. It's because your body's trying to make up for the lack of cortisol.
Okay.
When cortisol's low, the pituitary releases more ACTH, which is the hormone that tells the adrenals to make cortisol.
Right.
But ACTH also stimulates melanin production, and that's the pigment that gives our skin color.
So it's like one hormone being off throws everything else off, too.
Exactly. It's all connected. Now, what about when the adrenal glands are overactive?
Ooh, what happens then?
That's called hyperadrenalism. And one example is Cushing's syndrome.
Cushing's, okay.
It can happen because of a tumor in the adrenal gland or even a tumor somewhere else that's making ACTH. So the adrenals are constantly being told to produce more.
And didn't you say there's some like physical changes with Cushing's?
Yeah, you often see this buffalo hump. It's like a fatty deposit between the shoulder blades.
I've heard of that.
And a moon face.
Yeah.
Where the face gets rounder because of fluid retention.
Wow, so your body really shows you when something's wrong.
It's like setting up a flare.
Okay, let's talk about a really common hormone imbalance, diabetes.
Oh yeah, diabetes. It's basically a problem with fuel metabolism. Either your body doesn't make enough insulin, or it can't use it properly.
Right. Insulin's that key that lets glucose into the cell.
Exactly. And with the diabetes, that key is either missing or broken. So the glucose can't get in and your blood sugar stays high.
And I know that high blood sugar, if it stays high, that's when you start seeing all the complications, right?
You got it. It affects your blood vessels, your nerves, everything. It's not just about managing your blood sugar right now. It's about preventing those long-term problems.
So there are different types of diabetes, right?
Yeah, there are. Type 1 diabetes is often diagnosed in kids. It's an autoimmune condition.
Yeah, okay.
The body's immune system attacks the cells in the pancreas that make insulin. So they can't produce their own insulin at all.
So their body's basically fighting against itself.
It is. And that means they need to take insulin, either injections or through a pump.
So they're getting insulin from an outside source.
Exactly. Now, type 2 diabetes is different. It usually develops later in life, and it's often linked to lifestyle, things like obesity and not getting enough exercise.
I feel like I'm hearing more and more about type 2 diabetes these days.
You're right. It's definitely becoming more common, especially with our modern lifestyles. And the interesting thing is, with type 2, the body might still be making insulin, but the cells just don't respond to it properly.
They're ignoring it.
Basically. They become resistant to insulin's effects.
So it's not that there isn't enough insulin, it's that the cells aren't listening.
Exactly. And that resistance can get worse over time. So some people with type 2 might eventually need to take insulin too, even though their body's still making some.
It's like a wake-up call that our lifestyle choices really do matter. But let's go back to growth hormone for a bit. We talked about those conditions, dwarfism, gigantism, acromegaly. What exactly is happening in those cases?
All right, so remember, growth hormone is essential for normal growth, especially when you're a kid. If there's not enough, it can lead to short stature, which we call dwarfism.
And sometimes they can treat that with growth hormone therapy, right?
Yeah, if they catch it early enough, they can give the child growth hormone to help them reach a normal height.
It's amazing what they can do these days. What about when there's too much growth hormone?
So if that happens before the growth plates and the bones have closed, it leads to gigantism. You get excessive growth. Sometimes people get really, really tall.
Like those stories about giants. But I bet that comes with its own problems.
Oh, definitely. It can put a lot of strain on your organs and systems. But if the excess growth hormone happens after the growth plates have closed, that's when you get acromegaly.
Right. Acromegaly, that's when the bones thicken.
Exactly. So you see things like enlarged hands and feet, a prominent jaw, changes in the face.
It's like the growth is out of control.
Right. It shows you that even processes that are essential for life, they need to be carefully regulated. Too much of anything can be a bad thing.
Makes sense. Okay, what about those calcium regulators, PTH and calcitonin? What happens if something goes wrong with those?
Well, if the parathyroid glands, they're the ones that make PTH, if they get overactive, they release too much PTH.
And that can lead to?
Hyperparathyroidism. Often happens because of a tumor in one of the glands.
And too much PTH means too much calcium being pulled from the bones, right?
Exactly. So the bones get weaker, more likely to fracture, and it can cause kidney stones, other problems.
Another example of one thing being off, and the whole system goes haywire.
It really is. But what about when there's not enough PTH?
Oh, right. There's got to be a flip side.
There is. It's called hypoparathyroidism. That means low blood calcium. Can't happen if the parathyroid glands get damaged during surgery or because of an autoimmune attack. Even genetics can play a role.
And low calcium, that's bad too, right?
Oh, yeah. You can have muscle spasms, seizures, even heart problems.
Wow. So those calcium levels have got to be just right.
They do. It really shows how important it is for all these systems to be working properly. Even small changes can cause big problems.
It's all about balance. Okay, let's talk about something I find super fascinating, how hormones affect our behavior and emotions.
Oh, that's a good one. We often think of hormones as just controlling physical stuff, but they have a huge impact on our minds too.
Right. It's amazing that these tiny things in our blood can affect how we feel and act.
It really is. They shape our thoughts, our feelings, even how we interact with other people.
So it's like, are we really in control of our emotions, or are our hormones calling the shots?
Uh-huh. That's a big question. But let's look at some of the key players here. Remember oxytocin, the love and connection hormone?
Of course.
It's released when we hug, cuddle, breastfeed, all that good stuff. And it creates those feelings of trust, bonding, well-being.
It's like the warm, fuzzy hormone.
Right. But it's not just about feeling good. Oxytocin also plays a role in how we behave socially. Helps us recognize faces, understand emotions, and navigate social situations.
So it's like a social superpower.
I like that. And then there's dopamine, the reward hormone. It's released when we do something pleasurable, and it makes us want to do it again.
So that's why we crave that chocolate cake.
Uh-huh, exactly. But dopamine isn't just about pleasure. It's also important for things like attention, learning, making decisions.
So it helps us focus. Learn new things, make choices. That's a lot of responsibility for one little hormone.
It is. It's like the fuel that drives our brain.
And then there's serotonin, the mood stabilizer.
Right.
Right. It's all about happiness, calmness, feeling good. If your serotonin levels are low, that's when you see problems like depression, anxiety, even aggression.
So it's like keeping our emotions in check.
Exactly. It's making sure the orchestra is playing harmoniously. But it's important to remember, these hormones don't work alone. They all interact with each other and with other chemicals in the brain to create our complex emotional world.
It's mind-blowing. This whole system is so intricate. But let's talk more about stress and how it affects this hormonal symphony.
Stress is a big one. It's something we all experience, and a little stress can actually be good for us. But when it's chronic, that's when it starts messing with our hormones.
Right, and cortisol is the main player there. Can you walk us through what happens in the body when we're stressed?
Sure. So imagine you're facing a deadline or stuck in traffic. Your brain sees this as a threat, and it kicks off this whole chain reaction, starting in the hypothalamus.
The hypothalamus, always in charge.
Uh-huh, yep. So the hypothalamus releases CRH, corticotropin-releasing hormone, and that tells the pituitary to release ACTH, adrenocorticotropic hormone.
ACTH, that goes to the adrenal glands, right?
Exactly. And then the adrenals release cortisol, so it's like this relay race of hormones.
Makes sense. So cortisol, what does it actually do?
It's getting your body ready to deal with the stress. It raises your blood sugar, gives you that energy boost. It also suppresses the immune system, so your body can focus on the immediate threat.
It's like going into survival mode. But what if you're always stressed? Does that mean cortisol is always high?
That's a problem, yeah. Chronically high cortisol is really bad for you. It weakens your immune system, messes with your sleep, can even increase your risk of things like heart disease and stroke.
Wow, stress is no joke.
It's not. It's not just in your head. It's affecting your body on a deep level.
So finding ways to manage stress is super important. Okay, let's talk about another important rhythm, our sleep-wake cycle. I'm fascinated by how our bodies just know when it's time to sleep and wake up.
It is pretty cool. And hormones are a big part of that. The main one is melatonin.
Melatonin, the sleep hormone. I've seen those supplements everywhere.
Yeah, a lot of people take it. Melatonin is made by the pineal gland, a tiny gland in your brain. And the amount of melatonin you produce is directly linked to light.
So when it's dark, melatonin goes up and we get sleepy.
Exactly. And when it's light, melatonin goes down. We wake up.
It's like our internal clock.
It is. It keeps us in sync with the day and night. But modern life can really mess with that, right?
Oh, yeah. All the screens, the late nights throws everything off. What happens when our melatonin gets messed up?
Well, it can lead to more than just a bad night's sleep. All those things that interfere with melatonin, the artificial light, late meals, stress, even jet lag, they disrupt our internal clock.
And then what?
You get sleep problems, of course, but also fatigue, trouble concentrating, even mood swings.
So getting good sleep is really important for our hormones and our overall health.
It is. It's not just about how much you sleep. It's about the quality of sleep and being in sync with your natural rhythms.
Makes sense. Okay, let's talk about aging. I've always wondered how hormones play into that whole process.
Aging is complicated. There's a lot going on. But we know that hormone levels naturally decline as we get older.
Okay.
And that contributes to a lot of the changes we see, like less muscle mass, weaker bones, changes in mood and energy. Even our brains work a little different.
There's like everything's slowing down.
In a way, yeah. But it doesn't have to be a steep decline.
So we can do something about it.
Absolutely. There are lots of things we can do to support healthy aging, like staying active, eating well, and even hormone replacement therapy. But you'd want to talk to your doctor about that.
Right. It's about staying healthy and vital for as long as possible.
Exactly. It's about quality of life, not just quantity. Okay, last but not least, we should talk about this fascinating connection between our gut and our brain.
The gut-brain connection. I've heard about that, but it sounds kind of mysterious.
It is pretty wild. Basically, the bacteria in your gut, your microbiome, they're constantly talking to your brain.
Wait, bacteria talking to our brains? How does that even work?
Through hormones, of course.
Yeah.
Those little bacteria, they actually produce hormones that can signal the brain.
No way.
Yeah. And they can influence all sorts of things, like your mood, your appetite, your immune system, even your thinking.
Wow. So our gut is like a second brain.
Kind of. And it goes both ways. The brain can also talk to the gut, influence what's going on down there.
So it's like a constant conversation.
It is. And this whole gut-brain connection, it's a big area of research right now. There's still so much we don't know.
Makes you wonder what else we'll discover about our bodies. But if the gut and brain are talking, that means things like what we eat and how stressed we are, that all affects the conversation, right?
You got it. Diet is huge. It shapes your gut microbiome. Eating lots of fiber, fruits, veggies, fermented foods, that all helps the good bacteria thrive.
So another reason to eat healthy.
Absolutely. And stress, well, chronic stress can really mess with the balance of bacteria in your gut. Can lead to inflammation and all sorts of problems.
So managing stress is good for our gut and for our brain. It's all connected. This deep dive has been amazing. It's incredible how much these little hormones control.
I know, right? They're influencing our growth, our metabolism, our emotions, even how we age. It really shows how interconnected our bodies are and how important it is to take care of ourselves as a whole.
Well said. So for our listeners, knowing how important these hormones are, what can they do to keep everything balanced and healthy?
That's a great question. Even small changes can make a big difference. Eating well, sleeping enough, managing stress, connecting with others, all of those things can have a ripple effect and improve your hormonal health.
It really makes you think, you know? These tiny messengers are controlling so much. But how do all these different hormone systems work together? It can't just be like everyone doing their own thing, right?
Oh, absolutely not. It's all about teamwork. Hormones are constantly interacting, influencing each other.
So more like a big network.
Yeah, like a web of communication. One hormone might do something, and then that triggers a whole cascade of effects throughout the body.
Okay, so more like a symphony orchestra than a solo act.
Exactly. You can't understand the endocrine system by just looking at one hormone at a time.
You got to see the whole picture. Can you give us an example of how these different systems, like, talk to each other?
Sure. Let's go back to stress for a minute. We know chronic stress messes with cortisol levels.
Right. Cortisol, the stress hormone.
But stress can also affect other hormone systems, like the reproductive system. Chronic stress can actually interfere with the production of hormones like estrogen and testosterone.
Wow, so that's why some people have fertility issues when they're stressed.
It can be a factor, yeah. And stress can also mess with your metabolism. Remember how cortisol helps regulate blood sugar?
Right.
Well, if cortisol is always high because of stress, it can actually make you store more fat, especially around your belly.
Ugh, that explains so much. So stress eating is even worse than we thought.
It's not just the extra calories. It's the hormones driving those cravings and then telling your body to store that fat. And speaking of things being disrupted, stress can also mess with your sleep.
Oh, yeah, I've definitely noticed that. When I'm stressed, I can't sleep.
It throws off your melatonin production, making it harder to fall asleep and stay asleep. So you end up even more stressed because you're tired.
It's like a vicious cycle. No wonder we feel so terrible when we're stressed out.
It really is. And it shows how all these systems are connected. You can't just focus on one thing. You have to look at the whole picture.
So it's about finding ways to manage stress that work for you and help bring your whole body back into balance.
Exactly. But let's not forget about how hormones affect our emotions and behaviors. We talked about it a bit before, but I think it's so fascinating.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing that these tiny things can control how we feel. It's like, are we even in control of our own emotions?
That's a tough one. But let's look at some of those key players again. Oxytocin, the love and connection hormone.
The cuddle hormone.
Right. It's released when we hug, cuddle, breastfeed. And it creates those feelings of trust and bonding.
It's like a warm hug in a molecule.
I love that. But it's not just about feeling good. Oxytocin also helps us understand and respond to social cues.
So it helps us navigate the social world.
Exactly. It's like having a secret decoder ring for social interactions.
I like that. What about dopamine? That's the one that makes us feel good when we do something pleasurable, right?
That's right. It's the reward hormone. It motivates us to seek out those things that make us feel good. But it's not just about pleasure. Dopamine also plays a role in how we learn and make decisions.
So it helps us focus and figure things out.
Exactly. It's like the fuel that drives our brains to learn and grow.
And then there's serotonin, the mood stabilizer.
Right. Serotonin helps us feel happy, calm, and content. When our serotonin levels are balanced, we're better able to handle stress and challenges.
So it's like the calming influence, keeping our emotions in check.
Exactly. It's making sure all the instruments in the orchestra are playing in tune. But it's important to remember that these hormones don't work alone. They interact with each other and with other chemicals in the brain to create this incredibly complex tapestry of emotions and behaviors.
It's mind-blowing. It makes you appreciate just how much is going on inside our bodies all the time.
I know, right? It's truly amazing. But as we wrap up this deep dive, I think the biggest takeaway is that the endocrine system is all about balance.
Balance. That seems to be the theme.
It really is. Hormones are like the instruments in an orchestra. When they're all playing in harmony, the music is beautiful. But if one instrument is out of tune, it can throw the whole thing off.
Love that analogy. It reminds us that even small disruptions can have big consequences.
Exactly. And while some hormonal fluctuations are normal, there are things we can do to support our endocrine system. Eating a healthy diet, getting enough sleep, managing stress, and nurturing our social connections. These things can make a big difference in how our hormones function.
It's about taking care of ourselves, mind and body.
Exactly. And as we finish up, I encourage everyone listening to really pay attention to their bodies. Notice those little signs that something might be off and take steps to bring things back into balance.
This has been such a fascinating journey. We've learned so much about how hormones affect every aspect of our lives.
It's been a pleasure diving deep with you.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, the more you know about your body, the better equipped you are to take care of it.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the endocrine system. We hope you've enjoyed exploring this incredible world of hormones. Until next time, stay curious and keep learning.